Harold McGee is a leading expert on the science of food and cooking and the author of the beloved best-selling culinary guides on food and cooking and keys to good cooking. Now McGee is turning to the science of a long-overlooked dimension of our world, smell. His new book is Nosedive, a field guide to the world's smells. It is a product of over a decade of intensive research and is informed by the latest revelations in sensory biology and flavor chemistry. Again, the name of the book is Nosedive, a field guide to the world's smells. And it's a great pleasure to welcome Harold McGee to the roundtable this morning. Harold, thank you very much for being with us.
Wonderful to be with you, Joe.
What brought you to the subject of wanting to put this into a field guide?
Well, as you mentioned, I usually write about food and drink, and so I was going to write a book about flavor. I got intrigued by the smells of food in particular, and then I got intrigued by the smells of the world in general. So I cast this as a field guide because the world is a big place. There are lots and lots of different smells out there. And so I just wanted to make sure that people would have a place to go to find out a bit more about what it is that they're smelling and where it comes from.
How much does that connect and does that have to do with our enjoyment of food?
Smell is really the dominant sense when it comes to enjoying food. When we talk about flavor, we're really talking about the integration of taste on the tongue and smells in the nose. And of course, tastes are relatively limited. We've got a handful of different tastes, but we've got an infinite number of smells. And so smell is really what gives us the variety of flavors that we enjoy.
So since these smells are stimulated by specific molecules, you wanted to know a little bit about their backstories of what they're doing there.
Exactly. Smells are stimulated by molecules that are emitted by the things around us. They fly through the air. We breathe them in, and our olfactory receptors detect them in our nose and let our brain know about that. And what I wanted to know was what were they doing there in the first place? And in the case of many of the things that we enjoy, the flavors we enjoy in food and drink, oftentimes those molecules are there in plants for defensive purposes, to prevent animals from actually eating them.
So when you come to and take it beyond foods and cooking, when you become more aware of smell, what does that allow you then?
I think it just enriches our lives. We're more alive when we're sensitive and attentive to the world around us. And smell is a sense that, it's kind of diminished for a couple of reasons. One of them being that, in civilized life, mostly what we're doing is trying to eliminate smells. And so our houses are, generally speaking, devoid of smells, or else they're dominated by, artificial air fresheners to make it smell like lemon or pine or something like that. But in fact, the world is full of smells, and not all of them are necessarily pleasant or something you'd want to put in your mouth, but they're still giving us information about what's out there and what it's doing there. And it can be just pleasurable to walk down the street and sniff and, find out what it is that your neighbors are doing that you can't see, but you can smell.
One of the things that you point out is that so often that smelling, that is a momentary sensation. It's something that happens very quickly and then goes away. And you ultimately are looking to try to extend that for us.
That's right. Both to extend the sensation itself, which you can do by paying attention and sniffing and, making it come back, but also by giving information about what it is that those smells are doing in the world. That gives us a kind of, an intellectual hook to put the sensation on.
One of the things, I mean, this didn't really surprise me, but I will admit to you, it was a little challenging, which is there's a lot of science in the book. And so that scared me initially, but then you make it very easy. But did you realize just how much was going on? Was that something you were always interested in, or that you really had to take a deep dive into, or a nosedive, as the title would indicate?
Well, it was actually through foods that I became interested in everything else, and it was that surprise of, you know, realizing that foods can sometimes, in their smells, echo each other. You know, a cheese, which is old cow's milk, can sometimes smell like a pineapple, which is a tropical fruit. And when I began to realize that there were these echoes and resonances and correspondences, not just among foods, but between foods and the rest of the world, that's what led me to take a dive into the smells of the rest of the world. And it was not something I was ready for. I had no idea it would take me 10 years to emerge from that dive. But I loved every minute of it because I was learning so much.
How did you in the writing find the words to describe smells?
It was tough because first of all, smells turn out to be composites. You know, they're more like chords in music than like individual notes, even though, you know, we smell parsley and we say, no, that's parsley. But in fact, the smell of parsley is made up of a number of different smells that combine to give that overall impression. And so what I ended up doing was trying to describe those component smells and how it is that they come together to make the overall smell. And it's difficult because we can only go by what we've experienced. You know, if you've never smelled parsley before, then you have no idea what I'm talking about. So that's one of the reasons I want people to do a lot more sniffing, so that we can all communicate better what it is that we're experiencing.
So insects have a lot on us in this. You write about flowers and their smells. You ask the question, why do we humans take such pleasure in plant organs that are otherwise mostly useless to us? So what is it about flowers that attract us?
I think it's essentially the fact that flowers are, at least those of them that have scents, and not all flowers do, but those that do have scents are communicating with insects to get the insects to come and do the work of pollination. We have no particular interest in that, but the smells are there nevertheless. And so unlike the smells of animals, where, you know, we were kind of detecting each other and each other's remains, shall we say, and our own. So it has very much to do with our lives as animals and not the most appealing parts of it. In the case of flowers, these are kind of free-floating, almost like, you know, abstract colors in art. They have no meaning for us per se, but because they are sensations that we can detect, they just enrich our lives for that reason alone. And then put that together with often the visual beauty, and they just have a very important place in human culture.
As we continue to live through this global pandemic, one of the symptoms of COVID-19, of course, is the loss of smell and taste for many who experience. That does give us an insight of how it affects eating and drinking, doesn't it?
It does. And I have not had to deal with COVID-19 myself, but I have lost my sense of smell a couple of times in my life due to other viral infections. And one of them, in fact, when I was writing this book, so that was kind of scary. But it really does change not only the experience of eating, but just life in general, because We don't necessarily think all the time that we're surrounded by smells and that we're kind of situating ourselves by what it is that we're smelling. But that's the case. And then in the case of food and drink, you know, it just takes all the pleasure out of eating and drinking. We're satisfying our hunger and our thirst, but we're not getting the pleasure that we're used to.
And as we're doing this, rightfully so, we're masking up, which is good, especially in controlling the virus. But it does have an effect on our experiences when it comes to our surroundings and smell.
Yes, and ourselves. So, you know, when you have a mask on, you're blocking a lot of the smells that are around us. But you're also blocking the exit of your own breath as you're breathing in and out. And so many of us are becoming way more acquainted with the smells of our mouths than we would perhaps want.
Oh, yeah, we don't want that, usually. It's and so because we normally have the addition of just fresh air, right? And now we don't, and that is interesting because it does bring up something that you get into of how we smell and enjoy what we want to enjoy smelling, of how we achieve that.
Yeah, that's right. If we have free access to the air around us, then we can go in search of the smells that please us, like flowers, like pine needles in the forest and that kind of thing. But when we're restricted either to staying in our own homes or our breath is restricted with a mask, then our options are limited, and then we kind of realize what it is that we're missing.
The book is endlessly fascinating. It is titled Nosedive, A Field Guide to the World's Smells. It is published by Penguin Press. Harold McGee, I thank you very much for being with us. What a great pleasure.
Thank you, Joe. I enjoyed it a lot.
Be well. Thank you very much. Again, the name of the book is Nosedive, A Field Guide to the World's Smells. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.